You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Photojournalist Donna De Cesare first traveled to Central America in 1987 when many communities were caught up in the crossfire of civil wars. She focused her lens on families and especially the children that she met in these conflict zones. The civil wars in El Salvador and Guatemala have ended, but life has become more violent for many young people in these countries, and the region has had some of the highest homicide rates per capita in the world. Her photography is included in an exhibit called War Photography, Images of Armed Conflict and Its Aftermath at the Brooklyn Museum. It's running through February 2nd. She has also released a new book called Unsettled, Children in a World of Gangs. It's published by the University of Texas Press, and you can see a slideshow of some of her images on our show page. I'm very pleased that she was able to visit us here on our show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Had you gone there with the intention of focusing on children?
Not really. I went there with the intention of focusing on the civilian population, but also the conflict in general.
And are you able to form relationships with the children and the families that you photograph?
Yes. One of the ways that I did that was through working through NGOs and church organizations that worked in the conflict zones, of course, and people that I met.
And do you speak Spanish?
I do. But I went
maybe to, even Mayan in some cases.
Yeah, I don't speak any indigenous languages, no. But Spanish most of the time works. There's usually someone even in a Mayan village that speaks Spanish.
Haven't you sometimes felt the need to protect the identities of your subjects?
Yes.
Why is that? You have photographed some of them without identifying them. You keep their faces away from the camera.
Yes, and that's for multiple reasons. It really depends on the situation and the context in which the photograph is taken, but some of the children, if children are engaged in combat as child soldiers, for example, publishing a picture of their face in some contexts could be dangerous for them if they, you know, leave that life.
Have you ever felt that you were in personal danger?
It's a very good question, and I think that in the moment, there were very few circumstances where I felt that. With hindsight, as an older person looking back at my younger self, I realized that I did some things that I wouldn't do now.
I've spoken to Susan Micellis, who covered the war in Nicaragua, and she described popping her head up, taking a picture, and then ducking down again. Also, she was once in a Jeep that was hit by an explosive. So it can be dangerous.
Absolutely.
During your first trip to Guatemala, your landlady insisted that you contract a live-in domestic service. What were her reasons for that?
She felt that there always had to be someone in the house. And so knowing that I worked as a journalist and would be going away for a couple of days at a time, she said, you can't leave the house unattended. There has to be someone. And everyone has a housekeeper.
How did you find your maid?
Well, I didn't want the landlady to decide who would be working for me. So I went to visit some nuns that I had met. I had met a nun in Nicaragua where I had worked before I came to El Salvador. And she had told me that if I went to see the nuns, they might be able to help me because these sisters had a very elite girls' school in the wealthy neighborhood, Escalon, in the capital of San Salvador, but they also did work in the refugee zones. And so I went to the Mother Superior and explained the situation that I had a job for someone, and that's how I met Adela.
What are some of the difficulties of entering conflict zones in places like Guatemala? Did you have to check with the military before you went there?
It depended place to place, but in El Salvador, you always had to check with the military before you went. And they would issue what's called a salvoconducto or safe conduct pass. But it was very bureaucratic, and they would definitely try to limit the amount of time you could spend.
Because there have been some scandals that reporters have turned up that have embarrassed the military dictators over the years.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Massacres that occurred that they wouldn't want us to get to see.
Well, how do you stay safe when you're photographing in a dangerous area? The Susan Micellis approach, pop up your head, take the shot, duck down again?
Partly that, but also having good relationships with people on the ground who know what's going on.
Could you describe your first trip to San Jose, Las Flores? What was going on there at the time?
Yes, that was an area that many people had fled during a period of scorched earth bombing, carpet bombing, that the Salvadoran military had done. And many people went, and they were living in refugee camps in Honduras. I knew that the people were planning to come back. And so I wanted to visit the zone in advance of the return. There were still some peasants living there, including the family, some family members of the woman who became my housekeeper. So I went with a group from the Catholic Archdiocese, and I knew I could travel with them as far as the main town of Chalatenango because everyone was allowed to go there. But after that, there would be a checkpoint, and they would only allow people to pass who had the salvoconducto. I didn't want to get a salvoconducto because I knew then they would tell me I had only 10 hours to stay and I had to leave. I wanted to stay for a couple of weeks. But I didn't want to put the church workers at risk either, because if they were carrying me with them, they would then be breaking the rules. So what I did was I disembarked from the van, and a peasant woman we had arranged in advance that was going to the village walked ahead of me about 200 meters, and I followed her for about 8 miles. And that way she would know if I got stopped, and that's how I got into the town.
Well, where did you stay when you were there for those weeks?
Well, in each of those villages, there was always a house where the priest would live when he came to say Mass, and there were some nuns that were itinerant in the community. And so usually there was a community house with hammocks, and we'd stay in a hammock.
Although it hasn't always been safe for nuns either in these countries.
Absolutely not. In El Salvador, there were 4 American churchwomen who were murdered in 1981. That was before the time that I went there. But
yeah, and
one of them had actually worked in the village that my housekeeper came from.
And one of the survivors of that massacre was on our show to talk about all the trauma, and also the trauma of being accused by the U.S. government of being communists.
Yes. Yes, no, it's terrible stigma that people who have suffered so much then get characterized in ways that are unfair.
How did you meet the boy Abelito in Guajira?
Guajira. Abelito had been on the bus when I returned with the refugees and was photographing, and then he was living with a family that had basically adopted him. His mother had been killed when he was an infant, and his father had joined the guerrillas. And so he grew up in this refugee camp with a family that was his adoptive family.
And then you started investigating boy soldiers and child soldiers. They were on both sides of the Civil War?
This is true. There were children. You would find children in the ranks of the guerrillas as well as the army. But in the case of the children who were guerrillas, usually they were children whose family members had been killed by the army. And that was part of the reason. They were orphans, and then they ended up joining, whereas the Salvadoran military would routinely stop buses and forcibly impress young boys into military service. And I always was puzzled by this because constitutionally, everyone over the age of 18 was required to serve. So it seemed unnecessary that you would conscript a 14-year-old.
So do you have any idea of why they were doing it?
When I went to the Army base and
I asked... Just cannon fodder?
Yeah. When I went to the Army base and I asked the captain, he said, it's because they're so macho, they join up, they volunteer.
Sure.
Yeah.
Donna De Cesare, her book, Unsettled Children in a World of Gangs, published by the University of Texas Press. And you can see some of her images on a slideshow we have on our website at WNYC.org. There's a photo of a young woman on a bed reading a letter with a child resting on the bed next to her. What's the story behind that?
That's the story of a young woman, Yvonne, and her boyfriend, Carlos, was a child soldier in El Salvador, had come to Los Angeles, as had Yvonne, escaping from the terror when they were children. So they came essentially as what we call unaccompanied minors now. And they had a child together. Carlos tried to find jobs, and sometimes he did legitimate work, but he also belonged to the 18th Street Gang. That's what happened because the neighborhood he ended up living in Los Angeles was heavily influenced by gangs, and he was deported from the United States back to Central America, and that's a letter she's reading from him, telling her that he will come back because he wants to take care of his child.
Well, I would assume that those kids who joined the gangs in L.A. had already had experience, as you say, many of them child soldiers, so they had a different idea of what violence was all about. And then they go back to their home country, and they bring Los Angeles attitudes as well. Are they different than gang members who have never left?
Well, you know, this is interesting, Leonard, because there weren't gang members in El Salvador before these gangs started coming. There were small groups of petty pickpockets. They called them maras. Now they call the gangs maras, too. But this was very different. In the years that I covered the conflict in Central America, there were no gangs. There just weren't. It emerges in the post-war period after deportation from Los Angeles starts.
Are boys pressured into joining gangs even if they'd prefer not to?
I think that happens in a lot of communities, that people are afraid and they feel that they have no choice. They have to join up with something for self-protection. And there are also, you know, also some young kids look up to these folks because they think they see them as being powerful figures.
What about girls?
Girls join as well, although I would say that, you know, the tendency now is that girls are more sort of the girlfriends of than actual, you know, sort of gang members themselves. But there's a history of girls joining also.
Well, you have a very disturbing photograph on the cover of your book of a little girl. She's 4 or 5 years old?
3 years old, actually.
And she's holding on to a bird, and there's a handgun by her side.
Yes. Now, that's a picture that I took. It's a very long story. I'll try to make it brief. But it was the birthday of her uncle, who had been paralyzed in a drive-by shooting, and he was turning 16. And I asked if I met him at a rehab program. He was participating in a anti-violence program, Teens on Target, in Los Angeles. So they go around trying to tell other young people about.
We should point out that you have a whole section here that takes place in Los Angeles.
Yes, absolutely. And so when I met Giovanni, it was his birthday, and I asked if I could come to the house later. And when I went to the house, he wasn't there. Instead, I began to talk to his mother. And she was reminiscing about the war in El Salvador. And because I had covered the war there, we had a lot of things to talk about. And I noticed this child jumping on the bed out of the corner of my eye. And I thought, oh, that would make a lovely picture. And as I approached, I saw what looked like a gun as well. And as she dropped down, the gun came closer, and then she grabbed the bird. And she said to me afterwards, and, you know, I was just stunned by the scene because, you know, these are the kinds of images that happen very seldom in a photographer's lifetime where all the elements just come together spontaneously like that.
You didn't have to set it up.
No, I didn't have to set that up at all. And nor would I. I don't do that, actually. When I take pictures, even when they look, they might look very aesthetically contained, they're moments that happen naturally that I find.
Well, that's what makes photojournalists artists or not artists, the ones who somehow just take a picture and it turns out to be perfectly framed and perfect focus. That's, I guess, why you have this book, because you're very good at what you do. But these pictures are in black and white in a time when most people are working in color. It's almost hard to shoot in black and white these days, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it's much harder. I tend not to so much anymore. But this is a project I began quite a long time ago when I was working in film still with analog cameras, and I shot Tri-X film. And so I also decided that for this subject matter, I didn't want to switch to color. I felt that black and white was the right feeling for the project.
Don't you conduct photo and theater workshops in El Salvador?
Yes. In 2011, I had a grant from the Open Society Foundations, and I did a workshop with teenagers and with university students, and I also brought a play that a theater group here in New York, Houses on the Moon, produced. And it's a documentary play that they wrote based on a true story and the court transcripts of a case of a Guatemalan 14-year-old minor who was deported from the U.S. and later killed by gangs. And they use my photographs as part of the set because I actually had photographed in the neighborhoods where Edgar Chacoy lived in Guatemala, but also in Los Angeles.
You can see Donna de Cesare's photographs in this book, Unsettled Children in a World of Gangs, published by the University of Texas Press, also as part of an exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum called War Photography, Images of Armed Conflict and Its Aftermath. And that show runs into February 2nd. Or you can go to our website and get a taste of her work at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard. It was a pleasure.